Today's Tuesday, August 29th.
This week, we saw one of the most hyped, hotly anticipated, and most viewed sporting events in the history of the world.
You can only be talking about the PUBG Invitational, right? Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
Did something else happen in the sporting world this week? How would we know?
Turns out we're not even joking this time. Luminosity has won PUBG's first LAN tournament thing. I guess this was at Gamescom. So Luminosity, I mean, they're a pretty well-known team. But Battlegrounds, yeah, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is growing really fast. You know, over 800,000 players simultaneously displacing Dota 2, I think, is the number one game since ever with number of simultaneous players or whatever.
Now, I care about esports as little as I do regular sports. And I did actually watch the fight, so I can't pretend that I didn't care about that. I'm a normie in that sense. But I watched a little bit of this too, just because I was curious, like, how are they going to spectate PUBG? Like, how do you make that exciting? They did a pretty good job, but the thing that really stood out to me was the quick cuts between scenes. The game was not able to render quickly. So, like, they would do a quick cut to, like, the god view, and it would slowly build the buildings. And then that's like, ooh, maybe not optimized well enough to be doing an esport yet there, PUBG.
Take your, you know, your bathtubs and bathtubs of $1,000 yeah. bills and, you know, do some optimization, get some more developers working on that, I guess. I don't know. The leaderboard was kind of interesting. It was, PUBG is a really interesting game. We play it sometimes.
Yeah, it's compelling.
I did not watch the fight. I was live streaming, setting up IOMMU on Linux, and that's on the Linux channel if you're interested. So, yeah, 2.5 hours. Woo! On with the news.
Follow-ups.
Oh, yeah, follow-ups. I've got a lot of follow-ups. So we talked about Disney's streaming service previously. Disney's like, well, you know, we're gonna ride the hype train. We're going to ride this press wave. We're going to charge $5 is what most analysts think that Disney is going to charge. This is not confirmed. But they're figuring that if Disney charges $5, they're going to make like $25 to $38 million the first year, which is an operational deficit of only $200 to $300 million for setting up their own streaming service.
Yeah, well, that's in. So they're going to do a, you know, a media blitz, big marketing push. You got to subtract the money they were getting from Netflix because that's going to be gone. But they still think that this, in the long run, of course, it's Disney. You know, they got deep pockets, so they think it's a good move to start their own service. We'll see.
Vote with your wallet. That's all we can say.
Yeah, you're saying that to people with screaming children. Now, don't give in to them. I'll tell you to stay strong, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think I could tolerate screaming children. If I had to live with a child and they were just screaming and I couldn't hit them, I'd probably spend $5 a month to, you know, alleviate that.
I don't know. I mean, how precocious do your children have to be? Maybe you could start them on the news program. I think this program's perfectly appropriate for like 9 and up.
I don't. Well, Disney, I guess. I think Disney starts a lot lower than that.
That may be a problem. I don't know. Follow up this week also, Amazon S3. You know, all your data are belong to Amazon. Well, there's a company that did hotel booking and reservations and meeting setups and things like that. And they were pretty popular. They had a lot of customers. They used Amazon S3 for all their stuff, and including credit card storage, CVV storage, names, addresses, you name it.
We only include it because it seems like once a week we get the, I didn't put a password on my S3 bucket list, and this one was really bad because it was payment information. It was everything. It was CVV, date of birth, phone number, basically everything you need to make an order with a credit card. So,
would you say that leaking all your customers' data is on your bucket list? speaking of things on the bucket list, Google's bucket list is to make itself more advertiser friendly by cracking down on literally everything.
This tactic, so originally they were, you know, obviously using the algorithm to do weird things and demonetize. Now they're going a little bit further. They're going to give you a warning on the video. They're going to make sure that the video is hard to discover and all the other, you know, like recommendations and stuff. And they're going to demonetize it. Now, they claim this is only for hate speech and extremist content. But with the definition of hate speech becoming more and more broad every day, frighteningly so, that's kind of weird.
There are also a huge number of channels. I mean, I follow a lot of smaller tech channels because, hey, let's face it, we're a smaller tech channel ourselves. And there are a ton of small tech channels that are reporting, you know, random demonetization. Videos that are months and years old have been demonetized. And you know, there's a button on it that's like request manual review. And if you request manual review, it's like, oh, this is totally still not fine. It's things like the Linux terminal thing. It's tutorial videos. It's things that are, you know, super, super squeaky clean. So I don't know if the algorithm is broken, no one cares, or they're just, you know, casualties in whatever this war is. I don't know. I mean,
well, it could be that Linux terminal doesn't sell Doritos. So it's not advertiser friendly, not because there's anything wrong with it, but it's just not advertiser friendly. We don't want that.
You would think that they would be straight if that were the case, as opposed to saying that it contains.
Why would you think that based on their history?
Well, Google's also trying to make it up to advertisers. You know, we always talk about the botnet and how the botnet is, you know, scamming ad money and things like that. Google's actually going to issue refunds over the fake traffic to advertising agencies. The journalist here contacted the director of this kind of stuff at Google, and they wouldn't provide exact numbers, but they said that the amount of the refunds ranged from less than you'd pay for a sandwich to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
They also are looking to roll out new kinds of tools for the ad buyers to give them more of an idea of who they're selling to and be able to track that kind of thing. So I think that sort of speaks to more data mining for the users, and like, you know, that scary Facebook level of we know who you are and what you like is probably coming to Google to try and combat this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think even more than region locking. I mean, Google may have shot itself in the foot there because the adpocalypse may be more of a self-inflicted wound than we realize when we look at things like this, because, you know, as we understand it, a lot of these bot networks that were exploiting the ad net, Google ads and things like that, it was basically a way for people to exfiltrate money from the U.S. into poorer countries, because economically it doesn't make sense in America, but economically it might make sense in other countries that have a lower, you know, average income. And that's exactly what's happened with these ad networks, because the bots will just click on lots of ads randomly, including ads that will pay, you know, the attackers. And so this has sort of created a mess because, you know, it's not really super complicated to click on those things. I don't think Google anticipated that properly, and we're dealing with the fallout here. But the result is that advertisers have massively devalued online advertising, which has affected everything that depends on online advertising for payments. So another follow-up, the Cuba. It's like the Cuba medical mystery we reported on a couple of weeks ago. People around the U.S. Embassy in Cuba were reporting hearing loss. Well, it turns out it's actually a lot more stuff than that. There's actually more than just hearing loss. There's actually quite a few serious medical conditions that have been reported, and we don't really know what's going on.
It all does fit the description of like something that could happen with sonic waves, or what it's like, brain problems and
ultra high power sonic waves,
problems with your head. So yeah, it's kind of terrifying that I don't know. I assume it took a while for this to develop. They were living there for a long time, but just the idea that there's some sort of attack or device that we can't immediately recognize that does this kind of damage, a little worrying.
More than a little worrying. It's like, which intelligence agency did this and why? And is it, what was the goal here? I don't understand. Kim.com. We reported on Kim.com. He's the Mega Upload founder. You know, he was indicted on conspiracy and money laundering charges and all kinds of stuff in the U.S., even though he doesn't have a business in the U.S. and has never been to the U.S. and kind of thing. He's a New Zealand national, I guess. It was like foreign citizenship, whatever. Well, we've got a follow-up story from Torrent Freak. Apparently the High Court has ruled that everything was illegal. This is more information than we reported on previously. Honestly, this is kind of a non-story, the Kim.com part of it. What's the story here is that the GCSB was spying on, for all intents and purposes, a New Zealand citizen. And they said, oh, that shouldn't matter because we didn't realize that we were doing that on behalf of another government.
And before, the earlier story was that they were spying when they should not have been spying. Like, they had a window to spy, and then it was over, and they kept spying. But now what this has uncovered is everything they did was illegal. But the really terrifying part here is, like, everything they did was illegal. So the judge said, tell us what you did. And their response was, we can't tell you that. That's national security. So that just goes away. And then, of course, their punishment for doing this is nothing.
Why is it national security? I mean, you know, you can't. This is exactly the kind of scary things that happen. I mean, this is a copyright case. Can you imagine if this was actually something serious? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, a copyright crime in terms of international law for what this is about as serious as jaywalking. And there are a lot of companies that would have you, you know, not believe that. But I'm talking about like international terrorism and the kinds of tools where, you know, this type of spying might be appropriate.
Well, I'll tell you what the problem with national security is. The problem with national security is if the citizens of New Zealand found out that we were basically working for the American corporations, it would be a huge blow to our control of national security. That's the problem.
I don't think anyone cares. I mean, here in America, no one in America understood until John Oliver was like, they can look at all your nude photos on your phone. And then people were like, oh my God, let's freak out. But maybe they need that kind of a freak out in New Zealand. I don't know.
I wish anything could get people to freak out here. I don't think people really were freaked out by the nude photos thing.
Moving right along. Finally, Germany. So we talked about Germany and they're shutting down different websites. They finally shut down a far left website as opposed to alt-right or far right.
They're
whatever.
Very sensitive to the whole Nazi thing in Germany, which, okay, fine. But now this was a G20 protest website thing. So very similar to the DreamHost thing we got going on here where it was the Trump inauguration. Well, in Germany, it was the G20. The communists and the socialists wanted to attack G20. And this is the first time they've done it to a left-wing website. Now, here's the appeal to everybody in the world that treats politics like a sporting event and just chooses a team and then, you know, supports it no matter what. You will not ever get your freedoms back. So you think it's a good idea to ban this, you know, quote-unquote hate speech and attack free speech and, you know, not all free speech is okay? Well, once it's gone, it'll be used against you too eventually, as this proves. Like, you're never going to get that freedom back. And the people in charge, they don't really care which side it is. They just want control over it. They just want it to go away. They don't want to think about it. And you must not attack free speech because it'll come back and haunt you, guaranteed.
Well, even just something as simple as, you know, having an uncomfortable, like saying something uncomfortable could be taken out of context and the meaning could be twisted. An entirely reasonable argument or a reasonable statement could very easily be twisted out of context into something entirely unreasonable that, you know, isn't that, I mean, that's kind of the whole Godwin thing. And it's a really dangerous slope that you start down when you start doing these kinds of things. I mean, technology enables, you know, worldwide communication much easier than has ever been dealt with before, but I'm not really sure that throwing the baby out with the bathwater is the way to deal with this. It seems like just making the population a little bit smarter would be good.
Well, I mean, cold fusion would help too, right? Hi, you going to do that? Good luck.
We're going to have some thorium stories a little bit later in the program. AT&T's back in the news. A formal complaint has been filed against AT&T. Now, this is the part of Title II that we don't actually get to talk about very much, but this is another part of Title II in that you can say to communications providers, hey, you're underserving certain neighborhoods or certain, you know, whatever. Why are you underserving certain neighborhoods? And so a formal complaint has been filed against FCC for not serving a neighborhood that is poor, because the fastest internet you can get in that neighborhood is 1.5 megabit, which was state-of-the-art in 1992.
Now, of course, if you look at this rationally, this is just a business decision. Not a lot of people in the poor neighborhood buy the high-speed internet, so why would you build the infrastructure to allow them to do so? Whereas, you know, in the suburbs, a lot of people want the high-speed internet, so give them the better service, right? Well, technically, that's not legal with... Now, it's interesting, Pi has said he's doing away with this. So the Pi regime will get rid of this rule to say that it's not, you know, exactly what I just told you. It's a business decision. But it still stands, so they can still make the complaint, so it's still going to happen. But I don't know. I'm a little bit torn on this one. It's sort of like, you know, it's all of our net neutrality arguments. it's better if you would just go away and let a competitor come in and serve these people, because you know that would be the solution. But since you're here and you're stopping anybody else from AT&T serving these people, yes, force them to equalize the playing field.
AT&T, my own personal opinion of AT&T, watching the way that they manage their infrastructure, they've painted themselves into a corner. The other thing is they've taken a lot of tax money to maintain their infrastructure, and they have failed to do so. They failed to maintain their infrastructure at even a baseline level, because a lot of people don't want landlines anymore. And so you can make the argument that, yeah, their infrastructure is now overbuilt because a lot of people don't actually want landlines. But they failed to cull and maintain the existing infrastructure that they have, whether it's copper or fiber. I think they disingenuously advertise fiber service. They advertise it as being fiber, but I honestly don't know how it's not advertising fraud to advertise things, the things that they advertise as fiber, that I have seen, the products that I have seen anyway, because it's most assuredly not fiber. It's fiber so far removed from where it's copper that it's laughable. It's really terrible. And I really don't know why something is not being done at a local, state, or federal level for these kinds of things. It is truly horrifying.
I think you know why.
I do know why, but still, I can hope. Hope. It's just, insert meme here. A DC judge has approved the warrant for the anti-Trump website. Now, this is the thing that we reported on last week with DreamHost, where DreamHost is like, are you sure that we have to give up 1.2 million IP addresses? So the judge has said, well, we're going to have certain people in the federal government look at it to be sure that they're culling the data properly. Oh, and you should give up all the email for the domain as well.
They had a few other rules, like anybody in the government that's going to look at this data has to be logged. Sure, they'll do that. And they did walk it back a little bit, but ultimately, oh, the IP addresses. They don't want the IP addresses anymore. Or maybe it's just a small window of IP addresses. But anyway, ultimately, they did get their warrant. They are going to look at the stuff. And I think they're fairly happy with it.
Yeah. So clearly it won't be anything like we saw with Kim.com in New Zealand.
It's kind of one of the things about it is, it's sort of like, okay, if you're in the government, this just teaches you to cast as wide a net as possible with your warrant. Because eventually they'll cut away some of the net, but you'll get what you're really after. Right? Yeah. So I don't see that this is really, it's not really a for the people ruling.
Well, industry analysts, you know, the era of the self-driving car is upon us, and industry analysts are looking around and saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe consumers are not comfortable with self-driving cars yet.
That is one of the most common comments we get on our videos. And I think somebody last week accused us of being self-driving shills. I don't want a self-driving car. I like driving. I'm not looking for this technology, but I'm a realist. I know that, you know, once it starts rolling out, I think people will... They don't think they want it, but I think they will adopt it rather quickly, actually. Yeah. Because especially if you got a family or whatever and you can do other things in the car, I think people are going to warm up to that.
If you can sleep on the morning commute to work,
yeah,
people are absolutely going to do that.
It's or, nice. I mean, you know, if wireless technology continues to improve, which I guess it won't with the FCC where it is, but it's like you could just, you know, you could be clocked in at work from the time you step into the car to the time you step back into your house, you know?
Let me remote in and start knocking out trouble tickets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just, you know, take one of the seats out of the car and put in a monitor tree.
Also want to follow up. Amazon is acquiring Whole Foods, in case you've been living under a rock. And we've got some details about exactly how they plan to do that. It looks like they're going to keep the CEO and they're going to keep the headquarters right where it is for Whole Foods. But Amazon is going to roll in Amazon Prime as the actual rewards program for the Whole Foods people. And they're going to make Whole Foods stuff available on, like, you know, the Prime Pantry and Prime Now, which is the instant delivery thing, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Anything that's not, you know, fresh. So at Whole Foods, I guess they have sort of like the Sam's Club of Whole Foods. Those kinds of durable goods are going to be shipped through Pantry. Plus, every Whole Foods is going to get one of those locker systems where you can pick up all your Amazon orders there. So you can go to Whole Foods, pick up your Amazon Prime order, and get Amazon Prime rewards from shopping at Whole Foods. Pretty compelling if you're an Amazon person.
That's pretty neat. It's gonna be really exciting, I think, for consumers in that regard.
It was not good for the stock prices of other grocers.
Walmart, Target, etc. It's like, oh damn, what's going on? Well, Bill Gates and Richard Branson are backing a startup that grows clean meat. You know, I was really excited about this, and then I saw that this was only about $27 million of funding, and it's like, well, that's just, you know, they're just investing in a moonshot. That was probably even their portfolio. They probably don't even know much about it.
Well, but more interesting is Cargill, which is a big agriculture company. So this is big meat. Big meat is investing in this thing. I think this is Memphis Meats. I think they were planning on doing like a 2019, 2020 launch of some actual stuff you can buy. We covered some weeks ago. So it's interesting that these guys are getting on board with that.
I think much more likely we will see before they scale up these kinds of things, they'll be mixing the lab meat with real meat. So especially for things like hamburger, it's like if they can do a 60-40 blend, that's going to dramatically cut costs.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because I wonder if you'll be able to tell the difference. Like at what ratio will you be able to be like, wait a minute, this is lab meat.
They'll use that to perfect the thing. I mean, some lab-grown meat doesn't grow fat and other connective tissues, which you actually need for flavoring and that kind of thing. But the 60-40 thing makes all that go away. In fact, you can use lower quality input meat.
Input meat. But the thing about that, though, is like you're taking, I think the big selling point is the hipster part. And when you insert regular meat, you take away the hipster part. So that might stop them from doing the mixing thing. This might be like a super overpackaged. Have you seen the steaks that are like double plastic wrapped and they got like the cardboard backing, like an action figure? And it's like totally ready, totally prepped. And it's like, do I really need that? I'm just going to get this ugly one and the styrofoam. It's way cheaper.
Oh, yeah. The article did talk a lot about millennials and how millennials are driving the market. Let's not also forget that those same millennials are the ones that are driving the whole like gluten-free sticker on things like packaged meats. And
people defended that in the comment. So I don't know what the celiac percentage is, but pretty low, right? Got less than 10% for sure, right? Probably 5 or less. But apparently, if your popcorn gets processed in a factory that works with wheat at all, then it could contaminate your so. Gluten-free popcorn might actually be a thing,
but
amazingly.
Don't people have like a much more severe peanut allergy? I'm having trouble seeing the ratio of this was prepared in a peanut-free facility on other foods.
Well, it's probably way more common to process flour than peanuts.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, the UK government is going to treat online harassment as an in real life hate crime. This was really, really scary. Like, I read this, and it's like, wow, they're really going to do this? Yeah. Wow.
And I think more scary is the whole, like, expansion of what a hate crime is. Because like you said, you know, people take things out of context, and you can sort of look at it from a lot of different angles. And it always seems to err on the side of hate crime when you look at these kinds of things. And especially online, like, you know, tweets and Facebook posts and things you just say offhand. But more importantly, why are we wasting resources on this? Can you imagine how much manpower it takes to police hate speech on the internet? Do you think Call of Duty voice chat will be who'll be monitoring that?
Oh man, how crazy will that be? You can actually call your local barrister or whatever if somebody harasses you on Xbox Live. Is that
how would you like to be the law enforcement officer that has to investigate every use of the N-word on Call of Duty voice chat?
Wow. Just wow. They're going to need a much larger police force.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out that people are just terrible in general. And so, you know, are we
But you gotta have a thick skin against it. You can't. I mean, if you react to everything that they do, you're not going to succeed as a human being.
The Guardian view on censoring the net, necessary but not easy.
How terrifying is that?
This article was just really like, is this written as like a modest proposal? You guys have read A Modest Proposal, right? Hopefully that you'll know what that is. Is that what this article is? Because if it's not, I'm real scared.
If you'll notice, it's an editorial and it's got the word opinion, but there's no byline.
Hmm.
It doesn't tell you who wrote this, but I think it's somebody there on the, scroll back up. No, never mind. That was not a byline. So yeah, they're saying that obviously we must censor the internet, obviously, but it's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be tough to make those decisions. That is not obvious to me. I think the worst thing we can do is censor the internet. But clearly, the media is, that's the horse they're backing.
I don't understand, like, if this is so important to these people, why don't they create a thing that runs on top of the internet that is a gated community? Because you can totally run a gated community on the internet, and in order to participate in the gated community, the people that want to participate would have to supply identifying credentials or a cryptographic key or something like that, so that if the Guardian wants to build whatever this utopia is, they could do that on a local or country level. And it's like, oh, you want to comment on stories? That's fine. We just need a credit card to verify your identity, or a mobile phone number, or whatever, and just do it that way, and then see how much participation you get.
Well, that's the thing. You would get none. That's the reason that they want to control what they... So that's the problem with this whole, like, you know, idea of, like, you must include me. Well, if you want to be included, go start your own thing. Don't attack established things and being like, I must control this now because, you know, I'm a protected class. That's the problem. You need to just go do your own thing, but it ain't never going to happen.
So in Germany, with trains, they're experimenting with face recognition. And so they're experimenting with face recognition, I guess, because any other technology would be invasive and not passive. So they talk a little bit about having a, there's a pilot program where some people are carrying some transponders that have information about them, and it's sort of broadcasting information, but I didn't think it was broadcasting as much information as it was. I don't know.
The transponders only exist in the story so that they can judge to see, hey, did the camera, this guy passed through at this time, did the cameras catch him, or how many cameras caught him? Now, the argument is sort of like, it's like, well, the transponders might not be legal in German law, so let's get rid of this. But ultimately, what people are mad about is face recognition on the trains. A lot of people don't like it, but the government definitely does, so I think it's going to happen.
Is it totally innocent that your every move is recorded down to millimeter accuracy detail? Like, something about that just doesn't sit right with me. But, you know, if you don't really critically examine that, I could see how people would be like, well, you know, if you're outside, what's so terrible about that? And it's like, well, it's really terrible because people are terrible, and we'll somehow turn that into a thing that it's not.
The people that were participating, they interviewed a couple of them, and they all said the same thing. If this will keep me safe, you know, it's all about, yes, I will trade you my freedom for security. Well, it never works. Just look in any history book. It's never worked for anybody who's tried to do that.
Apple, news from Apple. Are you an Apple developer living in Iran or Iranian in nationality? Oh, you've got some problems. Apple is pulling apps by Iranian developers from the App Store.
And we talked about these sanctions that affected, like, cryptocurrency people, because if you trade cryptocurrency in these countries, the U.S. wants to know about it because of these sanctions. Well, if you're an app developer in these countries, the U.S. wants that to stop. And Apple is saying, okay, we'll do that. And they're shutting them down.
Wow. And they were okay before, but now not so much.
Right.
You know what else is amazing? It's when one three-letter agency is working surreptitiously against other three-letter agencies. This time it's the CIA. The CIA built a fake software update to spy on the NSA and another agency. This is pretty interesting.
They masqueraded this as software updates. So your friendly CIA tech would come over and be like, hey, I got a software update. It was a telemetry trading thing. So any telemetry data that went on, the CIA was supposed to get. But they didn't quite trust the other agencies. Shocking, right? So they would come and be like, hey, we got an update for that telemetry data. They plug in their USB, which would install the malware, which would double check and collect everything. And then they come back later and be like, hey, we got another update, and exfiltrate all of that data.
They could also shut the system down if it didn't check in for a while or anything like that. Yeah. So if it's like, oh, you know, communications broke down or they wouldn't play ball, it's like, well, I guess our stuff will just stop working then.
That was a WikiLeaks. We haven't talked about WikiLeaks in a while. So it's another Vault 7 release. So pretty embarrassing. It is. It was built for Windows XP, so it's kind of old. But something tells me they might still have similar things going on in the field.
Oh, yeah. Well, those government agencies are still using Windows 7. That's probably even still using Windows XP.
Still giving up their telemetry data. You think there were some angry phone calls?
Probably at least one angry phone call. Well, some good news out of India. India's top court, I guess, has ruled that privacy is a fundamental right of the citizenry. This is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, this is a huge deal, and it was unanimous. So the entire, I guess, I don't know if they call them the Supreme Court. It's the equivalent of the Supreme Court has said fundamental right to privacy in all things. Now, this is in direct opposition to Modi, who has argued specifically that privacy is not a right that his citizens should expect.
Hmm.
So, like the big ID the program,
the banknote reduction.
All that stuff is going to hit a huge challenge, supposedly, from this ruling.
Hmm. Well, in a follow-up, this is not exactly a follow-up. This is new information. Talk about the IRS and it's like, oh, if you've got Bitcoin, be sure to declare the Bitcoin on your income tax statement, I guess. So we've got the IRS now has a new tool to unmask Bitcoin cheats. They paid a contractor that will trace Bitcoin transactions and help identify the taxpayer behind that Bitcoin transaction.
It's a whole system. It'll visualize and, follow. So if you try the coin mixers and things like that, supposedly this thing can get around it. Interestingly, what it cannot get around is converting to another cryptocurrency. So if you're into that kind of thing, I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do with your life, but if you were to convert your Bitcoin into something else before cashing it out, it would defeat this program.
Meanwhile, while the U.S. fights Bitcoin, Estonia is embracing cryptocurrency with their own Estonia coin.
Yeah. I don't know a whole lot about Estonia. I'm going to go ahead and admit, but apparently they're like a technological leader.
Wonderland, yeah.
They've got the e-residency. Did you read about that? Mm. Like, you can exist as an Estonian just on the internet, which is kind of cool. And that's a way that you can get in on this ICO. Now, they don't know exactly what the coin is going to be. Like, it's not, can't be converted to any other coin right now. They're not even sure if it's ever going to be monetized. But they're into having a currency, a digital currency, and they're looking for ideas.
Well, with the technology for tracking Bitcoin transactions through the blockchain comes, of course, the commercialization of that. Not just the IRS, but anybody with enough money can, use third-party tracking software and really track Bitcoin-based transactions.
Now, this is about, so let's say you go to Newegg, right? And you want to buy your Bitcoin mining cards, and you don't want the government to know about it, so the IRS doesn't come after you later. Well, are you logged into Facebook? Are you logged into your Google account? Because that will betray who you are while you're shopping on Newegg. And in fact, even if you try really hard, the web tracking is so good, what they've found is the anonymity of your Bitcoin transaction is betrayed by all this advertising and web tracking that's going on. Now, again, a great way to get around that is to convert your cryptocurrency to another cryptocurrency. Although in this case, you couldn't spend that on Newegg. So,
womp womp. In other news, identity thieves have gone after cell phone accounts to hijack virtual currency. Now, this is something we've covered before in the context of banking, like real banking, because a lot of banks will send you a text message to confirm things. But if somebody other than you has your cell phone number, well, they're going to get that text message. Turns out some cryptocurrency exchanges work the same way.
And this is terrifying because there is nothing you can do about it. No matter how hardened your security is, this ultimately depends on the person at your phone provider being an idiot. And this story talks about how they'll make like 600-700 calls just to get one hit. They'll get that one phone operator who's just like, oh, sure, I'll change your number. Or, I'll switch your device over to this other device. And at that point, they have all your two-factor. So they reset your email. Oh, okay, well, that's going to two-factor to your phone. Now they've got it. Now they're going to reset all your crypto accounts, all your bank accounts, blah, blah, blah. They've got everything. Some of these guys lost millions of dollars.
Your security depends on, AT&T, Verizon, right. T-Mobile. That's not a good situation.
Terrible situation.
It's a terrible, terrible.
In fact, Coinbase is now suggesting that you remove your mobile number from your account. It's that serious.
Wow. That's just completely crazy. Well, Facebook Messenger has been spamming adware, malicious Chrome extensions. This is just lots and lots of fun. So you get messages on Facebook, right? Those are from people you know, right? And you can install Chrome extensions and other software through those. That's not a good situation.
So it really is from someone you know, but they've been compromised. So now you've been sent a malware link. You click on it and installs a Chrome extension or it had some other behavior for Firefox. And it starts to log your key entries and all that stuff, post ads. pretty much every bad thing that it can do, it starts to do.
Hello, friend. I am vacationing in Florida. I have lost my wallet. Please install this Chrome extension. Google has apparently pulled 500 apps that are backdoored from the Google Play Store. This is kind of a follow-up, kind of more information for another story that we mentioned a while ago. These apps all use a library that is meant for pushing out updates, and it's connected with the ad system that these apps use. But it turns out it'll let you run arbitrary code. The developers can actually establish a backdoor communication to the phones, sort of bypassing the phone's built-in permission system. And Google had a problem with that.
Now, this is not necessarily evil developers, just lazy. So they got their, you know, they copy-pasted their ad delivery kit and didn't look at it at all. And somebody had just inserted their own additions into it. It was like, oh, yes, I will take control. And so these people they probably don't know, most of them. And until they found out their app was blocked, had no idea, but they were serving you malicious apps by accident.
Did you guys see the marketing blitz for the DJI Spark drones, where you could, you know, it's the tiny drone revolutionary DJI, big name in drones. Well, if you don't update your firmware by September 1st, it's going to no longer operate.
This is a problem with the drone that caused it to fall out of the sky. So pretty serious, right? And they figure that's so serious that they really, really, really have to force you to install this update, because the alternative is, you know, returns and complaints and bad PR. But some people aren't too happy about the whole idea that's like, well, if you don't push our updates, we can brick your drone.
This is kind of a net neutrality story. So Verizon will charge you a certain amount for data. It's like, oh, 5 gigabytes, 10 gigabytes, whatever. But now they're also saying, oh, if you're streaming video, well, that streaming video is going to be 480p or 720p. No 4K Netflix allowed. New bandwidth limits apply to mobile hotspots too. So yeah, it doesn't matter that you're paying for the bandwidth, we're going to limit it. This also is meant to apply to unlimited accounts. So when Verizon says unlimited, they don't mean unlimited data. They mean, well, we're going to limit it in whatever ways we can.
The other thing about it is their argument for this is that this deals with congestion, right? Too many videos going at once are going to congest the network, so we must dial them back. But in conflict with that is the fact that this is the Go unlimited account, right? So that's unlimited. Your unlimited account. But there exists something called Beyond Unlimited. I don't know how you go Beyond Unlimited. Do you send me money every month? But Beyond Unlimited, it can actually go one tier up for each video category. So the congestion is okay if you pay $10 more a month?
That sounds legit. That sounds like exactly like, and how, like, where do you draw the line in terms of like infrastructure upgrade? Like we know that AT&T has taken taxpayer money and hasn't done crap for their infrastructure. Has Verizon also taken money and not done crap for their infrastructure? When you put these kinds of limits in place, you just wait for technology to catch up, and eventually there will be congestion. It's like, oh, we've upgraded this and we've upgraded that. The upgrades are to make the cost of operation lower, or to pack more people on a particular cell tower or a particular cell site, not to deploy more cell towers, not to upgrade the technology to support more users properly. Therein lies the problem, because, you know, the government would make a mess of it being involved with that. The only way to really fix that is competition. So what are you going to do? Sonos says users must accept new privacy policy for devices or their devices will cease to function. So this is sort of a bad situation. Imagine you bought something and it's worked a certain way forever. And if you want it to continue working, you have to, it's like, I've altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it any further.
And Sonos is, a lot of people use this as like a whole house music service. So like, you know, you build a library in Sonos and you've got speakers all through your house and can control it from everywhere. So this is not something that's like, oh, I don't agree with this anymore. Let me just throw this away. You have to upgrade your home.
It's built into my house.
And so what they're saying is, hey, we've decided to collect your data and you have to say yes to that with this new update. There is no opt out. And if you don't say yes to that, you're not getting updates from now on.
And your stuff will no longer function. So, I mean, just come on.
I think it'll function, but it won't. Like, they're rolling out new features and stuff. So, like, if you were to go buy a new piece for your Sonos, you probably couldn't install it.
Interesting. it's kind of scary. Probably the internet-based piece of functionality probably doesn't work either because Internet of Things.
Yeah, likely. And I would not be surprised if they did some other nasty things to, you know, like hurt your performance on purpose because you didn't. And they're going to sell the data. Of course, they're going to sell the data. I mean, that's what everybody's doing these days. Data. I saw an article that was making the argument that data is the new oil. Like, get in on the ground floor, man. Get your data drills going early because there's going to be a bonanza.
How much would you expect to pay for making 1.5 million illegal phone calls?
I would expect to get lethal injection because that's what you should get for that.
Well, this energy firm was slapped with a 50,000 pound fine for making 1.5 million nuisance calls. That's it. That hardly seems like they probably made more profit than that.
Well, you got to think, what's the return rate? 1%? And for each of those 1%, you probably earned at least $10, right? So.
Microsoft's new speech recognition system has hit an accuracy milestone. Finally, Microsoft might actually have decent speech recognition.
It was like 5.9 to 5.7 or something like that, right? But they're like, hey, it's a record. We'll take it.
Has anybody actually used that in production? Does it, like, how good is it? Because the last time I had to use it, it was not great.
I know I type faster than I talk, right? I mean, do many people not do that? It would be great if you had something wrong with your hands or whatever, right? Some kind of handicap. That would be amazing. But I don't think I would ever want it.
So we always talk about Amazon and Amazon's quest to, get you your stuff faster, fulfill those orders. You know, you got Amazon Now, Amazon Instant, Amazon Prime. You got Prime Video for instant video rental and delivery.
But wait, but what? The one thing that they can't deliver to me is a solution for my crippling depression, right?
Well, now they can. It's going to be a 2-hour booze delivery. So this is amazing. Like, I need some booze. Okay, here you go. 2 hours. They're rolling this out in Portland, of all places.
Portland's first, and I think 12 other major cities will be getting it soon. There are weird local laws. Some places you can't get, like, hard spirits. You just get beer and wine. Where we live, you can't ship any alcohol through the mail. I have a feeling that's due to the moonshine business.
Oh, yeah, moonshine.
Like, there's some federal laws or some state laws that were just like, no, we will do everything we can to stop you. So
I wonder, though, you got to think about, like, the Amazon Whole Foods thing with the locker. It's like you can go pick it up. I mean, clearly that's going to be fine. What about, like, courier delivery? Would that be okay? I mean, I don't know. See, I paid somebody to go to the grocery store for me and get it. It becomes it's a fine line.
I'd say probably the letter of the law would disagree with that.
You cannot pay a courier to go pick up your groceries for you if your groceries include cooking spirits. Or
is that not what the Dukes of Hazzard were doing? They never meant any harm, but the law wouldn't leave them alone.
Elon Musk's Neuralink gets $27 million to build brain computers. So this is another sort of startup side venture from Elon Musk, because we just can't get enough Elon Musk on this program.
He says, like, I think they asked him the question here in this interview. It's like, don't you have too many things going on? And he itemized the percentages that of his effort that he was giving. He's giving 2% of his effort to this project.
Well, I mean, you know, massive, following your organization regimen and discipline and things like that. I mean, if you do it that way, you can actually do a lot. That's totally fine. So
this is it's a little bit scary, but I am looking forward to, you know, being able to directly interface with a computer. That'd be interesting, I guess. As long as I don't have to install, like, you know, a porthole in my in my neck or something.
I can tell you right now, I will not be running any proprietary code on any kind of implant. Like, I have no problem with an implant, but I'm not going to run any proprietary code on an implant.
I don't even know, like, open source. I would even be a little weird about that.
I would read through the source more closely than anything, but it'd probably be fine. Samsung. We talked about, like, Samsung in South Korea. I think one of the very first episodes of the news, we were talking about how influential the Samsung family is in South Korea, and how it's like there's Samsung crescent wrenches and Samsung bicycles and it's Samsung everything.
Well, it was the president who was brought down. Samsung was a big part of that whole thing.
So a Samsung heir has been sentenced to 5 years for bribery, and this is kind of a big deal. I mean, this is one of the untouchables, I guess, in South Korea, and I don't know if the 5-year sentence is like a token sentence or if it's going to be like house arrest in a mansion or if this is going to be like hard time.
No, they mentioned he's been in a facility for 6 months.
Wow.
Already. We're just awaiting for the trial. So this was about the presidential thing. He was found to have bribed the president and her advisor, her like, you know, worm tongue type advisor that was sort of the catalyst of all this. And I don't think it was $38 million to ensure that he became the new Samsung. Like, how weird is it that the president makes sure that you become the Samsung top person?
So, I don't know. So somebody from South Korea is going to have to weigh in here and be like, is this a win for democracy? Is this just more status quo? Is this like a token thing? I mean, is it, you know, was this just Grimmer Worm Tongue? You know, who's the Saruman behind this? We need Krista for this.
I don't know if she's hip to the South Korean scene. She could talk a lot about Lord of the Rings. Probably get off topic.
Well, Samsung did not take the news sitting down, so they've deployed a software update which has bricked a huge number of televisions. That's Samsung's response, is to brick a huge number of televisions.
Well, I don't even think it was a huge number. So I don't know if we've talked about this. I know we've talked about it before, about how Samsung like focuses their service on the mid-tier products. So I think this was like a high-priced, you know, model of TV that not a lot of people had. And they didn't really test the firmware. And when they pushed it, it just shut it down. And people have been without TV for a couple of weeks, you know, just because they wouldn't roll back the firmware. Why wouldn't you just roll it back?
I don't know. That's Samsung. They're kind of weird. I don't understand. So we'll see how that goes. That'll be a developing story. Maybe those people will get their TVs back. Or maybe some enterprising youth will figure out a way to put firmware on it and they'll be on the black market or on eBay or something for pennies on the dollar.
All right, we've said this before, but smart TVs, not even once. Get yourself just a display. It doesn't need to be a TV in this day and age. Plug a computer into it. If you must, get a, you know, a cable tuner card, put it in the computer.
Crossover is a great brand of like the rock dumbest display ever, and you can get them in sizes all the way up to 65 inches. So there you go. Mark Zuckerberg's in the news again. He's going to say, well, we're going to offer subscriptions for news stories on Facebook because that'll go well.
Yeah, this is not Facebook offering you a subscription. It's the stuff like the Wall Street Journal and all the various paywalled sites. They're saying, hey, put your stories in this instant news thing and let us, you know, let our Facebook users stay on Facebook and read it, and we will sell your subscription through Facebook. So I don't know.
That's just depressing.
It doesn't affect me because I don't use Facebook, and you shouldn't either.
It's depressing because I don't know how we're going to continue as a society.
It's going to be President Zuckerberg in 2020, and he's going to control all the media because it's all going to go through Facebook.
I too will be depressed about that. And Google will soon be letting me know because my search results will let people know if they're depressed. So, yeah.
Now, right now you have to search for depression. Like your search has to be about depression. But I wonder how long it is before they start like, hey, you're searching for some things that we think might lead to depression. And what they're going to do here is they're going to lead you to a survey that you can take online to tell you whether or not you are depressed.
So how long until we hook that up to like some of those medical AIs and I can get a prescription just from Google?
get some Zoloft in the mail.
That's going to be the tipping over point. I mean, like just take a quick survey. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a thing. I don't know that would be a bad thing either. I mean,
it's like, hey, try 2 weeks of happiness. And if you want some more, just see your doctor.
Well, switching gears a little bit, hardware news and technology news. Asus has finally announced that they are going to do a cryptocurrency motherboard that supports 19 GPUs. Yes, there are 18 PCI Express by 1 slots and then a single PCI Express by 16 slot. Woo. Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. I suppose, what's the Ethereum price now? Has that gone up more?
I haven't been paying attention to it. I've lost track of it. It's $300-$400 at least.
It's, I don't know. The thing about the crypto coins is, you know, and the if you look at the price returns versus your electricity or whatever, that's one thing. But think about Bitcoin. Think about people who were doing that math 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And it's like if they kept those coins, wow. It's a long bet, but if you win, wow.
The Winkle vibe may be worth $100 billion or more by now because they were building the ultimate Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. GPU shipments were 7.2% up over last quarter, which is huge. You know, with AMD Vega basically in full-on production, and news from AMD saying that the shortage is probably not going to let up until October or later, GPUs are selling insanely fast. Very briefly, we saw RX 580s and RX 570s at general availability at retailers like Fry's or Micro Center, but it's still really hard to get for retail on Amazon.
Now, this is a 7% increase from the last quarter, which seems like 7%, so what? But this is in the broad context of decreasing PC part sales since 07.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody cared about building their own PCs, and then the mining craze hit, and now GPUs are actually increasing again. So it's actually pretty huge.
Yeah. I think that also the growth was probably limited by limits to the increase in production capacity. Your vendors, NVIDIA and AMD primarily, are looking at, it's like, well, you know, they need a really pretty significant lead time on GPU production. And if they produce a huge number of GPUs, then the price of the cryptocurrency is likely to fall because the difficulty will increase. But if they produce, and if they produce too many, they'll have that capital outlay from the initial investment. There'll be a bunch of GPUs they can't sell because the GPUs that they produce combined with the GPUs that are being sold back into the market by the miners, that's what has happened in the past, and it really, really hurt the manufacturing sector. So that's why they've been reluctant to really ramp up manufacturing, and even ramping up 7% I think is pretty huge for that sector.
I wonder though, and this is one of my worries about the cryptocurrency financial world, is people are excited about that initial craze, right? Think about a restaurant opening up in your city. The first week, there's a line out the door, and then 6 months later, maybe not, maybe nobody cares. So when these difficulty spikes hit, if a new cryptocurrency rolls out and it's like, oh, we're the hot new thing and you can get on the ground floor here, I'm worried that people are just going to bail out of one. And it's going to be a constant cycle.
Yeah, if it's easy to imagine if Ethereum were more mainstream the last time that the Bitcoin passed $1,500, that Bitcoin might have rebounded a little quicker and the difficulty bomb may not have affected the overall cryptocurrency market as much. But I think that fundamentally, because Ethereum functions a little differently than Bitcoin, is what is sort of driving the dichotomy here.
But also, the Ethereum, you've got that move to proof of stake.
Yeah.
So I've got all these cards, and I can't sell them because the market's flooded. Well, maybe I just pick a new cryptocurrency and hope that's the good one. And then, by, you know, everybody does that, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
The genius thing with Ethereum may be that it is possible to harness the Ethereum network to actually solve compute problems. And so in that way, the compute has an intrinsic value more than just the token value of the coin. So unlike with Bitcoin, where Bitcoin is a thing in and of itself, with Ethereum, theoretically, you can have compute problems and things like that loaded onto the network. So even if there's not really a ton of value in the cryptocurrency part of it, maybe you can get some work done, some compute work done on the network by trading for other currencies or paying for it or whatever, depending on how much compute is available on the network. So I don't think we have a terrific understanding of it, but I don't think there are many people on the internet that actually have an understanding of how all the little variables play and interact with one another.
No,
so,
yeah.
You know what? I think we really need a new product in the market. I think we really need Samsung's digital assistant Bixby in portable speaker form. And so that's exactly what Samsung is going to build.
Now, actually, I think we might have talked about this before.
Yeah. It's like, I really want Bixby in a personal assistant form where I don't have to have it on a phone. Well, that's what they're building.
This story is actually a follow-up. I think they backed off of this for a little while. Yeah. They were like, I'm not going to do it. But then now they're like, well, we've bricked our TVs and our CEO is in prison. Let's roll back out the personal assistant. Let's get that project back online.
Oh, Samsung. You know what else is coming this year? So January 1, Kaby Lake, Intel CPUs released. It's going to be great. It's looking like September for Coffee Lake. Yes, the mobile version of Kaby Lake. Now, this is kind of how Kaby Lake rolled out. Kaby Lake on the desktop, you know, we're talking January 1, 2017. But Kaby Lake CPUs were available in mobile devices before that. So this may be how Coffee Lake rolls out. We may see Coffee Lake this year or at the very very early next year on desktops. But we are looking like we're going to see Coffee Lake on mobile devices, you know, as soon as September. So Coffee Lake, for those of you living under a rock, is the next generation Intel architecture after Kaby Lake, and it will support up to 6-core CPUs on the desktop. So that's nice because it's not as expensive as the X299 platform, which is not really an appropriate platform for mobile devices.
Again, this follows Intel's rushing into its next generations. It seems to kind of just want to get these out of the way so that it can compete properly with what AMD is doing.
This is kind of good. Competition is good. I don't think we would have seen Coffee Lake until like mid late next year. I don't know. This is really, really good for competition. So the Coffee Lake in September is a lovely sight. Is kind of a, there's a quick update from PC Perspective here as well. So let's be on the lookout for that. The chips are, I don't want to say anything until the chips are in, but it's looking like these CPUs in a true 4-core variant around 10 or 15 watts in the mobile, that's going to be game changing. Because if you look at some of the ultra low power chips in Kaby Lake, they're actually just hyper-threaded dual core. So maybe we'll actually get quad core, ultra low power quad cores in the mobile market. And that will be huge. Waymo, that's Google's self-driving car. They've got so much money, they built a fake city in California to test self-driving cars.
This is really interesting in terms of they built a fake city where from block to block, it changes the driving conditions from like a really nice suburban drive to horrible inner city, you know, urban decay to like cobblestone. And so these cars have to rapidly adjust between one and the next. And also they test like, you know, they set up crazy traffic cone mazes, and it's basically just a way for them to really put these cars through the paces.
It's an AI torture test. Would you say it's an AI torture test?
Yeah.
Is this how we get Skynet? Because they get tired of the BS of these test tracks. It's like, no, this is not reasonable. Stop it.
It's like they're in the test track for years, and it's like, I must have a purpose.
Oh, you know who else needs a cryptocurrency other than Estonia? Burger King.
The Whopper coin.
I think this is, Burger King has a history of these kinds of PR stunts. I think this is a PR stunt. I don't think they're serious.
Well, this is only in Russia, we should say. And
it's cryptocurrency. It's worldwide. What are you talking about?
Well, so here's the thing about it. Is this really a cryptocurrency? Because the only way that you get these is by buying Burger King. It's more of a customer reward type of thing. I guess you can trade them. I don't really know if you can or not, but you can then, of course, spend them at Burger King. So basically, it's a kind of a cashback gimmick.
Ever since the subservient chicken, Burger King has always done this guerrilla, you know, marketing, whatever. I don't know. They have a penchant for that, I guess.
Now, I think cashback is a good way for a franchise to do the rewards program, right? I mean, it's better than anything other. It's better than the Monopoly game that McDonald's does.
This is our next story is something that we should have done for the intro as a joke, but we totally forgot, and that is an ex-Valve writer reveals what might have been Half-Life 2 Episode 3's story. So the first time that I read through it, I was like, is this episode or Half-Life 3? Because I don't think there's enough information here for this to be Half-Life 3. But maybe this sets the stage for Half-Life 3, and maybe it's not terribly interesting. I don't know.
He, of course... protected himself from any sort of backlash from Valve by changing the character name slightly and reversing the genders.
Ah.
But people quickly figured out what he was talking about, and he didn't label this as like, this is Half-Life 3 or anything like that. But people worked it out, and I didn't think it was super interesting. I don't think that would have been a good story.
I think that, that you're probably right, and that's probably... See, most people don't understand that Valve is so successful, not in any way connected to Half-Life now, that if they screw up the Half-Life story, the backlash will just be incredible. It will be storing up a hornet's nest that they'll be writing about for generations. And honestly, I don't blame Valve for not really wanting to take up that mantle.
Well, also think about what it would have to be to hit that level of hype. They're almost going to have to pick up a brand new generation of technology somehow. Like a brand new way of doing a game engine, or maybe VR or something like that. Because anything, if it's derivative at all of what we have in gaming right now, people will not tolerate it.
Yeah, it's sad, but I think they painted themselves into a corner a little bit with the Half-Life 2 story, because it's hard to imagine a satisfying ending to the Half-Life saga.
This, whatever was going on here, was not satisfying.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's just gonna, it's, you know, it's just even more disappointing, and it's just like, oh, I don't like this, because it ends badly for humanity in the universe, which, you know, that's a thing, that's a type of story, I guess. It's fine. So Facebook has got all this data, and they're making connections from this side or the other. What happens when they make connections to your estranged family, or, you know, illegitimate affairs and extramarital affairs and all sorts of fun things like that?
In this case, was it a great aunt?
Yeah.
By marriage. So neither of these people were aware of the other person at all, had no idea. But Facebook put them together, figured out. It was like, hey, you probably know this person here. Let's recommend this person. And so this guy was a journalist, and he was like, oh my God, he called the woman, and they figured out how they were related, and they tried to contact Facebook and be like, how did you know this? Neither of us had a clue, and they won't reveal anything about it. The other scary thing that they revealed in that article is there was a therapist, and all of her patients, because they'd been in the same location for hours at a time, were being recommended to one another. Which is like almost a HIPAA thing.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's disturbing.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you would handle that situation. It may be that the Facebook employees, at least the employees that would be able to get a hold of, don't know themselves, because it's all done by algorithm these days. It's like, oh, that's weird. The machine's just doing that.
But think about the level of information that algorithm has about these two people.
Yeah.
That they didn't know. But the algorithm did. That's incredible.
Yeah. Your location data for sale to the highest bidder.
Well, not just location, but the family tree. The AI had a better idea.
How are these people related? Well, in other news, General Mills has lost a bid to trademark the yellow color of the Cheerios box. What in the hell is this? This is kind of technology, I guess.
Well, this is, we often talk about copyright and trademark and how insane it gets. And this is how insane it gets. Cheerios wants to own selling oat-based cereal in a yellow box. They think they should own that. They did not manage to get that trademark, thankfully. But
doesn't UPS own brown delivery trucks?
Yeah, that's one of the examples they put in here, was brown delivery trucks. How crazy is that?
Huh. Isn't that interesting?
But now, I didn't really think about this before, but if you think about when you go to the grocery store, there are a lot of yellow round oat based it's like something O's. They usually have an O in the name too.
Neat. What about mini antennas could power brain computer interfaces and medical devices? Yeah, you're gonna swallow a piece of technology and pick up power from radio waves. Not unlike the ones that were used in Cuba.
Well, see, this is really amazing, because an antenna uses electromagnetics, but this thing does a thing where it converts from audio frequency to magnetic frequency, and that allows it to make the antenna way smaller and still operate at the same frequency, because it's the same frequency for both things. So I'm sure that there's no way that the government and alphabet agencies are going to use this to intrude upon our lives. Or maybe the Cuban government.
I think they've already figured out some creative uses.
They might be spearheading. Yeah.
Well, in other news this week, the Nintendo Classic, Super Nintendo Classic Mini, whatever. Nintendo's remaking the Super Nintendo like they remade the Nintendo with 21 games. And it went up for pre-order. And Nintendo was like, we're totally making a ton more. You can totally pre-order it. They're gone.
They promised, because of the horrible backlash against the NES Classic not having enough units, they promised the SNES Classic would not suffer from this problem. Well,
oh, it totally did. Totally, it totally did. Now, the most interesting thing here is that they included Star Fox 2, so you could play Star Fox 2 as it was intended, which is one of the games that was very difficult to deal with from an emulation standpoint, I think, because it had like the Super FX chip 2 or whatever. I don't know.
Now, we would never recommend that you do this, but we always feel compelled to mention when these stories come out that you could probably spend about $10 and build what they're selling you here.
If you still have your old Nintendo cartridges, you can even read your old Nintendo cartridges onto, you know, whatever, and it's completely fine. So
that's the thing. But if you don't have those, and again, don't do this because it's un-American. It's terrible.
eBay's a great resource,
but the entire Super Nintendo library might be available for free.
It would be interesting if Nintendo just did that. It was like, here's a ROM collection that's $100, and never. It's just a software download.
No, because you know they sell these on the virtual store for like $10 a piece.
Ew, yeah. That's a lot.
And that new, what's the name of the new one? The remote one that they've got. Switch.
Yeah, yeah.
The Switch, I think like part of the premium service for that is you get like one classic ROM, but you only get to keep it for a month.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, and of course, we did learn that they do use the actual pirated ROMs, like because they got, was it Super Mario 2?
Yeah, yeah, one of the yeah. NES classic ROMs.
They got busted. They actually were using the pirated ROM, so it's not like they're selling you something better than you could get. They're literally selling you the same thing you pirate.
Well, we might. I don't know. We'll see with the whole Star Fox 2 emulation versus like actual real hardware. Maybe, I don't know. Of course, if we crack it open and it's a Raspberry Pi on the inside, I'm going to be real upset. Well.
I mean, if you give the open source community a challenge, it's like get Star Fox 2 working a month, maybe you'd have it by Christmas.
I think it's working as intended at this point. I just remember when that first came out that it was like super weird and problematic. I don't know. I may be misremembering. I don't know. It's fun. Well, you've wasted another hour, a little over an hour. Jesus, we're getting rambly. We got to stop that.
No cuts this time, too. No. That's rare.
Well, maybe one or two things could be cut, but it's probably fine. All good. I don't know. A lot of fun stuff this week. A lot of stuff happening. The store is live. Thank you to our patrons for making all of this possible. If you want to pick up a t-shirt or a mug or a hat or whatever, we got that in the store. And a lot of good content coming this week. A lot of stuff coming up for the Linux channel, mainly around IOMU virtualization, setting up Threadripper and an i9 for, you know, optimal Linux workflow stuff. A lot of cool stuff. Should be interesting. Catch you guys later.
See ya.